who want just sports, who are coming to us on their lunch break.
You're listening to Talk Sports.
Come on in, sports people. I'm going to feed you. You ready? Sports headlines now.
Airing every day from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Sacramento Kings owner. His name is Stephen Clark. Nope. No. Whoops, I screwed this one up already.
On 1340 WKGN.
Kings owner Vivek Ranadive did something unconventional. He addressed a depleted crowd, acknowledging the people's right to protest. I'm moving on from this one. Let's.
Hour three, we are back.
Jesus, Cam. Hour three brought to you by the McKinney team, Keller Williams Realty. The McKinney team can help you with all of your buying and selling needs. Travis and Emily do a great job. They helped John find his home.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Kendall got their place through the McKinney team. They can help you with whatever you need in the Knoxville area when it comes to buying or selling your home. Give them a shout out. If you look at the McKinney team reviews online, they're like perfect five stars, too.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Love the McKinney team. We are big fans here.
ZillowKnoxville.com.
ZillowKnoxville.com, or you can visit them at 5616 Kingston Pike over at the Keller Williams building there. So shout out to Travis and Emily McKinney. Let's kick off our three headlines now with Cam and Ben.
NFL owners just voted to ban the Oklahoma drill, which is like the tackling drill that they use in football, from training camp because they're hoping it's going to reduce concussions.
Really?
So and that's like as of an hour ago. I guess they just voted on this today in the owners' meeting. Oklahoma, that was like where men were made back in the day on like the high school field.
Yeah, man.
So, is Oklahoma the Tennessee Tough that we do or the circle or whatever? Or is
that
where
it also banned like the king of the circle and
or is that where you line up and you've basically got like the center, the running back, and the linebacker?
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's okay. It. You've got like three offensive linemen and three defensive linemen just clashing heads. And then you've got a running back and a linebacker and a quarterback. Quarterback hands the ball off to the running back.
Running
he goes either right or
out.
Left, tries to beat the linebacker through. Linebacker tries to get through, or the defensive line, they try to get through and tackle it. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's a great time. It was so fun in football.
And the circle.
And like the ring drill where it's just the two people in the circle, and also the half line drill. So, when they're just using half offensive line, half a defensive line, that also got banned in this owners meeting.
Sounds like they've done away with a lot of the contact drills.
Yeah, which concussions, and it's a big argument point now. So
yeah, by the time you get to that level, though, those guys know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's not as much hitting in NFL practices anyway as there are, I think, practices at the college and high school level because, those guys they're in shorts and shoulder pads a lot, or sometimes just shorts and helmets because they're professionals and they know what they're doing. They don't have to risk their brain every time they hit. But the Oklahoma drill, that is a fun drill.
Yeah.
I remember because pads are so close. You just line up the pads on either side, maybe 5 yards total.
Yeah.
And you got those three linemen. It's just.
And it was that big moment when somebody like called you out and said, "I want you," and you had to go show out, and everybody's standing there. Yeah, big moment.
That's where men are made.
Yep.
Yeah. Were you? I'm assuming you were a running back.
Yeah, I played cornerback.
Okay, but you still got in.
I did a little bit of running back, yeah.
Okay, you still went in on the.
Yeah,
did you
absolutely.
Ever get in on the lines, or were you always?
Oh, yeah. They had us doing a little block. I played receiver for a little bit at one point. So,
okay,
they
so
had
that
us
makes
do
sense.
The, with running back.
Receivers blocking. Yeah.
It's Ben, a good time.
What about you? Did you ever do any Oklahoma drill?
I didn't play football in high school.
No.
We can get one fired up outside.
If you guys want.
I've been urging for us to have a ring of pain with the station. Because I've really been talking a lot of trash to Trey Wallace, hoping that he'll get in there with me. Because I really feel like when
his
it comes
knee,
to like
he can't handle that, man.
When it comes to like sumo wrestling type stuff,
the
like
dude slipped in mud, was incapacitated for 3 days.
Just knocking a guy out of the ring. I feel like I could handle anybody at the station.
Oh, you could drive anybody out of the ring.
Do you think anyone could beat me in the Ring of Pain?
No. You think you could take Cody in the Ring of Pain, Cam?
I'd give it a shot.
I haven't done it in a long time.
I ain't scared of anybody.
I just think
it's hard to move this weight.
I think Cody's a brick wall on the offensive line these days.
I think it would be so much fun. I'm trying to get Trey to do that with me eventually. Maybe Big Matt, you know, intern Matt.
Intern Matt.
He's a big dude.
He might be able to give you a run for your money.
Yeah.
But I feel like Cody's got a little bit of a rage streak in him.
Chance might be tough.
I think Cody, like when he gets mad, it's just he sees red and it's like a bull going at you.
I could definitely see that.
Chance would probably be tough just because he's in such good shape, you know. But I think if I got under him, I don't know.
I think in this scenario, no matter what, if you're the low man, you're winning.
Yeah, I think so.
Seattle Storm guard Sue Bird is out indefinitely due to a left knee injury.
Sue Bird out indefinitely.
Yeah, as first reported by High Post Hoops. Ariel Chambers, the WNBA star will undergo arthroscopic surgery on her left knee and may miss a majority of the 2019 season.
Sue Bird's got to be getting up there.
You hate to see it.
The Storm began play just this weekend. I mean, you hate to see it. First weekend of the WNBA, and one of the best stars, Sue Bird, has to go under the knife.
That's really going to hurt viewership.
I mean, you guys are making fun of the WNBA here, but Sue Bird is a legend in that sport. I would appreciate it if you guys would show a little respect to Sue Bird, of all people.
Dr. Michael Joyce will perform the surgery in Connecticut at a date in the near future, if you're wondering.
How long has she been in the WNBA? Does it mention that in the article?
Let's see.
That's not something we're going to take the time to look up.
I'm going to look it up.
It's been a long time.
Sue Bird.
I mean, she is legitimately a legend in women's basketball. So for her to be out, that's got to be a hit, you know.
So 19-year-old pitcher Carter Stewart, who was a eighth pick in the 2018 MLB draft by the Braves, is going to sign in Japan for $7 million, six-year contract worth more than $7 million, which this is a groundbreaking like situation because he's going to make more than he would have made in the MLB, and he'll also have the opportunity to be a major league free agent at 25 years old. So it's kind of changing the way that these baseball prospects are looking at coming into the next level. And so, it's a really good Japan league. Like, the team he's joining has won 4 of the past 5 Japan Series championships.
So he's 21?
He's 19.
19, God. Yeah, so he's got to play in Japan for 6 years?
Yeah, he signed a 6-year contract.
Ugh.
But the Braves are apparently offering him a reduced signing bonus offer because of an alleged injury. So he ends up making way more by signing in Japan.
Ugh.
And then, yeah, once he gets 25, he's going to have the chance to go wherever he wants, and he's going to, you know, skip the, like, AAA process and the AA and, you know, coming up through the major league ranks making nothing. So
is it $7 million a year?
It's overall. More than $7
million,
overall.
Over
the 6-year contract.
So he'll make $7 million. What was he going to make with the Braves? Do you have that
million a year?
I do not have that number.
You just
know
that
it's... It says he likely would have received a bonus of less than $2 million and made even less over the next 6 years, barring rapid ascension to the major league. So for
he's
him,
making, he's making a little over $1 million a year. That's pretty good money.
Yeah, he wouldn't have made that. He would have,
yeah,
you know, like went straight to the MLB almost. Like,
is it worth
Sue Bird is
in Japan though?
Sue Bird is in her 17th season currently.
Sue Bird, 17th season in the WNBA.
Well, that's gonna be the thing. It's kind of like, you know, like Brandon Jennings back in the day. He went to Italy out of high school instead of going to college for that 1 year.
Yeah,
you know,
but
it's not
Italy's
as long,
Italy.
But yeah,
like Italy's would be fun. Japan seems like it would be really tough to I don't know, man. I don't think I could spend that much time in Japan. There are so many people there. Does it say which city he's going to? Is it Tokyo? That's going to be stressful if he's going to Tokyo.
I do not see a city. It's the...
You know how many people are in Tokyo?
I don't even know how to pronounce this this team. I'm not even going to attempt it. But, yeah, he's a really big prospect, and he's changing it up.
So it said he would have had a signing bonus here of $2 million.
Of less than $2 million.
So 1.8, 1.9, something like that probably. And then he would have made another $2 million over the next few years.
He said he would have made even less over the next 6 years.
I'd stay in America.
Barring, like, jumping up.
He goes to Japan, gets $1 million over a year.
I would have stayed in America.
And like he said, he skips the AAA process where he's probably making, you know, $60,000.
And he can come straight over to the league and go to any team he wants.
But he's still getting, if he had stayed in America, he's still getting probably 1.9 as a signing bonus.
I would take the long-term money.
In Japan.
Japan is
really... Do you think you could live in
Japan? Competitive baseball.
Yeah, I think Japan is the second best baseball.
No, I know they do. I know they do.
They're probably right there with us.
I know they do. They've had some great players there. But could you live in Japan? That's where I would have the trouble.
Really, the fact of the matter is, it's what, a 6-year contract, so which probably means he only needs to play about 4 or 5 before he can actually start negotiating actual to get out of it.
Yeah,
or
he could probably find a way to get out early, but
if he shows out enough, he'll get interest to come to the MLB.
Yeah, and worst case, he made $7 million.
Yeah, I mean he's making.
And you could hit back in the minor leagues.
Not spending that much time in Japan.
I'd take the $7 million over the 6 years versus $2 million up front, and then less than $2 million over 6 years. That doesn't make any sense to take less money.
It does make sense when you're living in Japan.
Japan's not a bad place to live.
It seems miserable to me.
It's not bad. It's like
there's so many damn people there.
There's a lot of people. It doesn't necessarily make it a terrible place to live. Like, they're very advanced.
It seems miserable. I'd stay in America. I'd go play in some Midwestern farm squad.
It's not like it's a third world country. Like, it's
I know.
Highly developed, like, industrial giant.
I don't know. I just always thought it would be tough to live in Japan. All right, any more headlines?
Luka Doncic and Trae Young named unanimous NBA all rookie selections. The first 5 picks from the 20 NBA draft were actually all on the first team for the rookie team.
So the all-rookie team. Cam, you said the Hawks had 2 guys on there.
Yeah, the Hawks also had Kevin Huerter on the second team. So future's looking bright in Atlanta. If anybody wants to hop on the bandwagon before the season and the draft starts, we're still taking applications.
The first team rounds out with Luka, Trey, DeAndre Ayton, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Marvin Bagley III. The second team consists of a familiar name, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from Kentucky, Colin Sexton from Alabama, Landry
Shamet.
I didn't want to say
Shamet.
Shamet?
Yeah. I'm not positive, that's what I think.
Mitchell Robinson and Kevin
Huerter.
So that's the NBA all-rookie team.
Yeah, and legitimately, Luka and Trey both got 100% of their votes every single time.
Oh, yeah. I'm
so
sure they did.
Both
they
of
had
them,
big years.
200 total points, which is recognized point votes to go to the
pretty much team. Unanimous.
Yeah. Yeah. Going to be close with him for who wins rookie of the year. People are saying it's probably going to go to Luka, and it probably should. He was more consistent over the year, but...
But Trey
was awesome in the second half, so that's, you know, recency bias.
What have you done for me lately, right?
Yep, exactly.
I got one more for you, Cody.
Okay.
XFL Tampa officially announces Jerry Glanville as a defensive coordinator.
Ah, yes, I saw that coming through yesterday. Jerry Glanville going to the XFL as Tampa Bay's DC. Jerry Glanville is 77 years old. So he's being hired on by Tampa Bay to be the defensive coordinator.
Nothing like a shot of youth in the arm.
77 years old, man. I mean, that. I guess Monty Kiffin.
We still got guys coaching their 80s these days.
Yeah, it just seems, I don't know, seems late old to start a new job.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I couldn't imagine the stress of coaching any level of football past the age of 65.
Jerry Glanville, obviously with the Falcons, that's what he's known for from 90 to 93 as a head coach. He was a head coach of the Oilers, too. So he did a couple of radio things around here, too. Did some radio spots and stuff like that. So, hey, props to him, I guess. Going to go be a part of the XFL.
Getting paid.
Yeah, go play for the, or not play, but coach for the Tampa Bay team. All right, that wraps up headlines. We'll be back just on the other side. Brother Bellas in the back, sweet singers in the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly, red blue lights flash out from behind. Tennessee basketball officially gets a boost yesterday with the official announcement that Uroš Plavšić is transferring in from Arizona State.
Uroš Plavšić.
Are you sure it's Uroš?
Uroš.
It's not Uroš?
It's a. There, it's like it's an Uroš. U. It's Uroš with a little roll of the R.
Uroš.
Uroš.
I'll check and be sure.
Plavšić.
Tom Sokoviak, the media relations guy.
Yeah.
Could use a pronunciation on his name, too. He put out a video, a short video of the proper pronunciation.
Yeah. Houston's actually Uroš. Houston's been over it for all over for 2 or 3 days now. He's been trying to make sure everyone knows it's Uroš. Uroš Plavšić.
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 Plavšić. You're saying Plavšić. It's Plavšić.
Plavšić.
Plavšić. The V comes first. Check the spelling.
Uroš. That's all I care about.
Plavšić. Uroš is a skilled athlete with impact size, Rick Barnes said in a statement. He's a strong physical player who can hold his own in the paint. His offensive skill set could also allow him to play away from the basket, keeping the floor spaced. His mobility and ability to run make him a great fit in our transition offense and pressure defense schemes. His comprehension of the game and understanding of the value of being a great teammate are more reasons we're excited about him joining our program. So my favorite thing about him, I'll just, you know, say pretty basically, he's 7 feet tall, maybe 7'1". I've seen 6'11", I've seen 7'1". Yeah, Google's got the Arizona State roster, I think, had him at a solid 7'2", 240. The man is long. He's got length. He should definitely help inside now that Kyle Alexander is gone.
Apparently, his weight is being broken down, or not weight, his height is being broken down on various sites as different things. On one of them, they had him in centimeters, so you had to work it to meters and then over to feet, and had him at like 6'11", but that was off of his high school tape, I'm pretty sure. 6'10 or 6'11".
Yeah, if he's anywhere from like 6'10 to 7'1".
You're happy?
I'm happy.
You got a tree down there.
Yeah, 6'10 is the minimum qualification to me for a tree. So I officially call Uroš Plavšić a tree. Happy to have him joining us.
I'll be excited to watch Uroš and DJ Burns, you know, bang around down low. DJ's like 6'9", 6'10", like big old boy.
Barnes says he doesn't have any trouble moving around, that he's, you know, pretty good when it comes to getting down the floor. So
yeah, he's fairly athletic.
That's good.
He can run the floor, like I said. Like, if you look at, I mean, it's his high school tape. It's a little bit old, but if you look at that, you can see him get out in front of the defense a couple times, catch some fast break balls. He's good around the rim. Like, he can shoot. He's a decent addition. We'll see how it translates. You know, he sat out a year at Arizona, and now he's coming over here.
Have a little more worry about DJ Burns probably getting down the floor. He's had to lose some weight, so that's good.
They've got him more listed in the forward position.
Yeah,
he's not more of a center.
Four.
So, like, yeah, hopefully, in my head, I've got it worked out to where both of them will be on the floor, and we just have a couple presences down low. Because
yeah,
DJ, for being so how big he was when he got here, had some decent feet and a good little hook shot. Like, watching his tape and you know, seeing some stuff around campus, like, he can definitely make some plays down low in the paint.
Yeah, I just hope both of these guys are in good enough shape. Kyle Alexander and even Fulke did a pretty good job last year. So obviously it's a rebuild for basketball. We're starting fresh with all new players outside of Lamonte and Jordan Bowden. And, well, I mean, I guess,
and Fulke.
Like Fulke, but
and DJ was on the team. He just didn't really play.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of, like, you know, new players, guys who are really going to matter in the lineup.
Josiah James out there.
Not that Fulke won't matter in the lineup. I mean, I'm
Lost
sure
his
he,
fifth star.
He will be. But it's a restart for Tennessee, but I think they've got some good pieces in place to where I think the talent level's there with the guys that we're going to have. I just don't think it's – I mean, I just think it's bubble at best next year as far as actually getting to the tournament. You know, I think we're going to be pretty young, and it's not the kind of young guys that are NBA prospects. Those guys are talented enough; they'll get you to the.
You thought you had one until he went up against the other nine.
I mean, Josiah James might end up being one of those guys. I don't know. He doesn't really seem like a lottery pick right now, but we haven't seen anything from
him. He can work his way up, probably. He will still have he's still an athletic guard that is. I mean, he was a five-star for a reason for the longest time. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, he has tools.
Yeah, so he'll probably get in, start playing against the higher competition, figure it out halfway through the season. Then you'll have like the highlight plays that you're kind of looking for. But you know, really, if you look at just from a recruiting star standpoint, Lamonte was a four-star. Josiah James is a four-star. DJ Burns is a four-star, and now you've got this kid who's a 7'1" player who like. Should always like as long as you're over 7 feet, you should be an impact player in the paint. You know what I mean?
As long as you're just not completely useless, if you can move a little bit, and I mean, you got to trust Rick Barnes to bring in a guy who, I mean, he says he's got mobility.
So there's
I trust Rick Barnes to bring in a guy that's going to fit.
There's a good bit of talent on this roster if they'll just play to it.
Yeah, they have the potential. It's just if they're going to reach the actual potential.
Now, Plavsic might have to sit out this season as a transfer, but Tennessee is going to seek a waiver to make him immediately eligible.
That would be huge to get that. Need that.
We never get these waivers. Everybody in the football realm is getting cleared, and we're still waiting on two guys.
Yeah, that's insane.
Can we get one of them an answer? I mean, good Lord.
I feel pretty decent about our guard lineup next year. I mean, the thing I've been thinking about is it would be the inside game that was giving me the most worries, but hopefully DJ Burns is in shape to play. And this Plavsic guy, I mean, if they can get his waiver cleared, I think that's a pretty good foundation for a team that can, you know, under Rick Barnes, I think he's a good enough coach to get them developed into a tournament bubble team. That's where I'd have us right now. I'd have us squarely on the bubble.
It's going to be weird watching Eves and Plavsic out there trying to figure it out together. Just two, like, one's just an athletic freak and the other's just a freak in height.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Have you guys, by the way, have you seen the trailer for this Once Upon a Time in Hollywood movie?
I have not.
I've never
was just watching it.
Heard of that.
And it looks really, really good. It's Quentin Tarantino's newest movie. Tarantino's got a new one out.
Shout out Tarantino.
Yeah, man. Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie.
Okay, I have heard of that. Yeah. I have heard of that because I heard it had that all-star lineup. Okay,
it does.
Yeah,
it's even got Al Pacino.
I have not heard of this. Yeah. Al Pacino.
Yeah. I'll have to check out the trailer then. Yeah.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah, so, I mean, it's already got like a, I'm guessing they've released it early to a few people, you know?
Sorry, got reviews out?
It's a 9.8 on IMDb and a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Wow.
I don't know how that works since it hasn't been released yet. I'm guessing a few critics have seen it.
Yeah, they usually let
it. Does it come out like this weekend?
No, it doesn't come out until July 26th. But I saw some super early
shows.
Yeah, like I'd be stunned if they like. I know like they let some critics in to like certain viewings to kind of give like their first thoughts, like the top level ones. But like
that's like well before premieres.
Yeah, 2 months like, out seems like long.
Dakota Fanning, she's in it too. Sharon Tate, Kurt Russell.
Yeah, they got all star lineup.
The actual Sharon Tate is not in it, but Sharon Tate is portrayed in it. Luke Perry? You guys know Luke Perry?
I know the name.
Yeah.
Don't know him personally.
Tarantino. It's got to be good if it's Tarantino. I mean, I don't think Tarantino's ever really released anything that wasn't good. Is there anything Tarantino that's not good?
I only know like three Tarantino movies, to be quite
really?
Honest. Like Django, like Pulp Fiction was him, right? Mm-hmm. What else? Like,
yeah, I can't think of any bad ones off the top of my head. Yeah.
Reservoir Dogs, Inglourious Bastards, Hateful Eight, the Kill Bill stuff. I mean, everything he's ever done has been
I never saw any of those.
Really? You never seen Reservoir Dogs?
I think I was too young. Reservoir Dogs like is old, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fairly old. I mean, like, that was probably before my time. And then Inglourious Bastards, I was still, like, in elementary or middle school when that came out, and I was not allowed to see it.
That's a lot of people's favorites. But or Inglourious Basterds, yeah, it's a lot of people's favorite. What's your favorite one, Cam?
I really like Django. I did really like Django. I did like Inglourious Basterds too. But like you said, off the top of my head, I can't really think of any duds he's had.
I can't either. Pulp Fiction is my favorite, which is a very basic take because that's what
I think
most people would say. But it's a
quote unquote cinematic masterpiece.
It's a damn good movie.
Yeah,
yeah. Then I would go Reservoir Dogs after that, but. Yeah, I just saw the trailer to that. Very excited about that. Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, coming out July 26th with an all-star lineup.
Have you seen John Wick 3 yet?
I have not. I have not seen any of the John Wicks.
Really?
I know John Reed is a big John Wick guy. No, I had somebody telling me this weekend they weren't good, though.
Whenever John gets back, you can nerd out over the John Wicks because he loves those.
I've only seen the first one. I was going to watch the second one before I watched the third, but I've been hearing the third's just as good as the first one.
The John Wick fans say that it holds to a standard.
That's
and
good.
That like yeah. like they said it was. I think in the court people were talking. They said it was like an 8 or 9 out of 10.
Some guy at the Applebee's I was at this weekend told me that it was a waste of time, that John Wick 3 is a waste of time and it's not good. But he was eating at Applebee's with me. So yeah. I don't know if you trust that opinion.
Was he eating there by himself?
He was.
Yes. Yeah, I would not trust his opinion.
At the bar.
Yeah.
Which is
Applebee's bar. Okay.
You know, to me, John watches more movies than anybody I know, so I give him the benefit of the doubt of having like a good movie take. He said they held up to par. He was raving about it. I'm all in on the Wicks. I might go and watch the three. I like that it's the three movies, you know, are basically over like a 2 week span.
Yeah, that's
like you're supposed
cool.
to know that like literally like every single thing that's happening is happening in real time. Or
they already came out with a release date for number four.
Oh
too.
Wow!
Yeah, like in 2021. So hitting it while it's hot, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, keep going.
Got to stroke it while it's burning.
Yep.
I don't know. I was going to say you got to stoke the fire while it's keep it burning. So
we'll see you guys on the other side.
Stroke it on the other side. Ran across an interesting tweet yesterday, putting the lopsidedness of college football in perspective. Based on the last few national champions. And this wouldn't have been that hard to figure out, but when somebody actually puts it into perspective, it is a little bit alarming.
That it's just Clemson and Alabama and Clemson and Alabama.
Well, basically. And it's considering
Ohio State mixed in there.
It's considering current recruits. So this guy put out a list of the last few national champions. He said, this is how old current recruits were when your team last won a national championship. So current recruits is anybody 17 or, you know, younger, basically.
So unborn?
Yeah, so the guys who are being recruited right now to go play college football, this is how old they were when your team last won a national championship.
Born in 2001 or later.
Clemson, 17. They won it last year. Alabama, 16. They won it, you know, 2 years before that. And then you got to go back to Ohio State as the only other team. So,
and that was
current
2014.
Yeah, that was 2014. So that number is 13. So the current recruits were 13 when Ohio State last won one. They were 12 when Florida State last won one. And I don't know about you guys, but to me, the coming of age period on becoming like a big time football fan or really knowing about it and keeping up with it. For me, it was about 9. What was your age?
I want to say I was probably a little bit later because like it took me getting into the football games before I got into like actually watching them.
Yeah, that was kind of the same with me.
I was probably about 10 or 11.
10 or 11,
a little
Cam?
Bit later.
Yeah, I'd say 10 or 11.
10 or 11. I think that's probably the average age like where boys are getting into sports. You know, you're kind of getting into that to where you're starting to play some like Little League or Pee Wee football or whatever. So, yeah, I'd say, you know, somewhere between like 8 and 12, right in that range. Well, so basically all the other national champions before that, current recruits don't really remember. Like if you asked a current recruit about Auburn's 2010 national championship and asked him about Cam Newton, I would say they know who he is. Like they probably remember like bits and pieces of it.
Yeah.
But it would be like about like you remembering what, like the 01 team or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I mean, like my first
That's
real
crazy.
My first real memories of anything was watching like the Casey Clawson team in like 2001, 2002.
Yeah. Right.
But like I didn't start caring until like the first game I went to was 04 Florida.
Yeah.
So like that was probably when I first like really got into it all, and you know I mean like right then you experience everything because like we beat Florida, you have like the you know the craziness and Neyland, you know.
I think it really puts it into perspective how dominant Alabama and Clemson have been, and for them to be dominant in the current recruits' formative years, because these recruits probably don't care that Florida State won it when they were 12. They probably don't care that Ohio State won it when they were 13.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you're not in high school at 12 or 13. Really, I mean, and again, this is no shocker, but Alabama, Clemson have just completely dominated the sport for, you know, really the last 5 years. And now I think that has helped them to get a real stranglehold on this recruiting to where those two schools can kind of get whoever they want. None of these kids these days, they don't even remember Florida's titles. They don't remember Urban Meyer. They were 7 when Florida last won their national title.
Wow.
These kids today were 4 when Vince Young made the play in the Rose Bowl to beat USC. They don't remember that stuff like we do.
Oh my gosh. Now that you say that,
puts it in perspective.
Cuz that's like, yeah, that
makes
is a huge
old.
That was a huge pivotal thing in my like viewing career, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Vince Young was one of those players that was just like out of this world to watch for me as a child.
Oh, I think a lot of people who are in their 20s or, you know, at least like mid-20s to 30s and older, whatever. I mean, I think we all put that up there as like that's probably the number one moment.
Yeah, one of our top college football moments. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching it. I was laying in bed and I was just, you know, I was a teenager or whatever, and I'd stayed up. My mom always let me stay up late to watch like the championship games and
yeah.
stuff. So I stayed up late and I watched it.
And man, I couldn't.
I'm still amazed by it.
I can't imagine having recruits that like that's just so stunning to me.
Yeah.
People that are around, like that are now coming up and have not. They just don't remember. They just weren't necessarily like paying attention.
Yeah.
Whenever one of the greatest like moments in college football of the last 20 years happened.
And the thing is, there's only 10 schools on here total. So, you know, other than Alabama and Clemson, and the majority of them
are SEC schools, at least.
Yeah, they are. But the majority of them, the kids don't even remember them. You know, they don't remember when they were 3, 4, 6 when LSU won it, 7 when Florida won it. So, or 6 weeks when Miami won it.
Oh, my gosh.
And then at the bottom, this guy, Bud Elliott, he throws in not listed equals not born.
That's,
so,
that's
so like our
thing,
title.
Like, yeah, like our title means nothing now.
No, like and, our 98 title, I mean, if we bring that up to these current recruits, I mean, how much are they really going to care about that?
Yeah, they don't. And like another one, you point out that 01 Miami team, like that was another, like my first few memories of Tennessee football are Casey Clawson, that 2001 team going on that run. But like, yeah, like you said, that 2001 Miami team, that was the benchmark that my friends and I held football to for a long time. We were like, that is one of, if not the greatest football team I think I've ever watched.
You know, everybody always says college football is cyclical. That's like a common term, common phrase that people talk about. But I wonder if it's changed to the point where really it's not. Because it hasn't been cyclical since Alabama came on
and just started dominating.
In 07.
Yeah.
In 08. Well, 08 is the first year. But and since Clemson has come along with Dabo. And I just wonder, like, is anybody going to be able to break through? You know, because I always thought Urban Meyer was the next best coach, or I would have even had him above Dabo in my rankings. But he's not in the game anymore. Ohio State can't, you know, when they get out of the Big Ten, they're not that impressive
in
the postseason anymore. So they're still getting some recruits, but like Georgia is really probably the only one that has a chance right now. And I don't think that they have near a good enough coach when they go up against Saban and Dabo.
Yeah, and like
they got the talent though.
They do, and Georgia, you know, it's been 30, 40 years at this point that since they've won a national title, but they at least had the growing success to go off of. Like, hey, with this really average coach that we've gotten rid of, we still won 10 games a year. Think about what we do when we upgrade.
Yeah, Georgia lucked out because they have so much talent in the state. Like, even when Alabama and Clemson are getting all the best talent, Georgia's still happening to get the good players.
Yeah.
Just because there's so many there. And, you know, I'm from Georgia growing up. Like, all you hear about is, like, everybody's a UGA fan. Like, there's no Tech fans, anything. Like, everybody's a UGA fan. So, like, growing up, that's where you want to go. So,
you get that offer, you're in.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really is amazing when you think about Mark Richt's tenure there and how he could not have won a national title in all the time that he had at Georgia, because he came on in, well, like, it was 2000 or
2003.
No, it was before that. I want to say it was 2000 or 01, because 03 they were in the SEC championship game.
Yeah,
unless he made it his first year, which
I think he made it his second or third year. So yeah, you're right there. 2001 or 2002,
and it's amazing.
2001.
So having that much time, with that much talent in the Atlanta area and in Georgia.
Like, you remember the Matthew Stafford, No'Shawn Moreno? Like, that year, they – oh, my God. AJ Green, like, they were loaded. Yeah. That should have been the easy path. And
well, in 2012, they were a play away against Alabama. And they would have went on to, I think, hammer that Notre Dame team just like Alabama did.
Yeah.
So, Richt got him close. I think you could argue Richt probably got him about as close as Kirby has. And there's a funny thing going around –
Kirby's
because
gotten him there
through like through the first 5 years. He has, but I mean, Richt had him a play away.
Yeah,
know,
I mean, so. like it's essentially the same thing. Like Kirby was playing Alabama in the NCAA or in the national championship, whereas Richt was playing Alabama for the SEC championship to go to the national championship. Essentially the same thing.
Either way, when you're playing Bama, that's basically your
national
your ticket,
title,
your play-in game. Yeah, but they. You know, there's a thing going around about Mark Richt and Kirby Smart's first 3 years or something. I think they have, like, the same exact record. But it does feel like Kirby just has more talent, and it feels like he's a little bit better coach. I don't know. I was just looking at this thing about the current recruits and the ages they were for the last few national titles, and it's wild to me.
I definitely think Kirby is up the talent at Georgia. I mean, they were getting top classes, but, like,
yeah,
that class that they signed
the
year before.
Oh yeah, it's stacked.
Legitimately historical. You know what I mean? Like, they had the most 5 stars to ever sign in the same class.
I wonder if Kirby's good enough as a coach for Georgia to break through. You know, break the Clemson Alabama streak.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Bama falls first because Saban's age, and I think we were starting to see it after last year's championship result, but. I don't know. I'm hoping for some more parity in college football, and I'm hoping there's some coaches that can come along, maybe Jeremy Pruitt, that are good enough to kind of – I mean, I just wonder, is anybody going to break through this?
I think now that Georgia has upped the talent level, I mean, they didn't have to go too far to be up there with the top dogs, the top tier, the tier one. So, I think now that they're on the same competitive level with the talent, especially now that they're a year older, another year in the weight system and the program, whatever.
And you got to think 2 years in a row of being right on the doorstep.
Right on the doorstep, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I said, like, I think they'll take that next step. Like, we've seen even when, I mean, they had to cheat to do it, but when Ole Miss got on the same level of talent as Alabama, or at least close, a guy like Hugh Freeze can look at it at Saban and said, you know what, I can beat you 2 out of 3 times that the playing field's even.
The difference is, like, Kirby is Saban Jr. You know what I mean? Whereas Hugh Freeze was kind of the anti-Saban.
Different style.
The offense absolutely. And all that. But like,
I mean, Kirby has shown that he can come close.
The way I see it is, like, once the talent level gets even, which Georgia has done
it
that.
It should be.
I think that's when you kind of see where the coaching comes in. And the only thing that's shown me that Kirby might not be smart enough to get over the hump is that fake punt. The fake punt screwed.
Yeah, but then Saban turned right around and did his own dumbass.
But
it was
in a moment of desperation, really.
So weird that Saban did that. You know,
yeah.
Just so the most respected coach ever, and he turned right around after he had killed Georgia because of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turns around and does the same thing. But, yeah, I mean, they were in desperation mode.
I think you'll see Kirby take another step this year and probably get them to the championship again or over that hump. Like, it's coming.
I mean, those have got to be the three contenders again, right?
I mean,
Oklahoma, like, yeah, they'll probably win the Big 12, whatever, but I think they don't play defense.
I think everybody's fooling themselves talking about Georgia kind of falling apart. Like, they lost their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, they'll
like,
be
okay.
Fine.
They're going to be fine.
They're here to stay.
They have their pass. The guy who was the passing game coordinator is now the offensive coordinator. Like, they're not taking a step.
They're going to be running the same stuff, same terminology, all that kind of stuff. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we will try to get over the South Carolina Vanderbilt
hump.
Missouri hump. Hey, it's progress, man.
Hey,
progress.
Yeah. As long as we're competing to be
fourth. Gotta start somewhere.
Yeah. I'm not even trying to be negative. Like,
competing to be fourth in the SEC East.
Yeah,
love it.
I mean, you can look at it negatively, or you can look at it like, you know, you got to build. You got to build, and I think we're building. I don't know if we'll get to where Georgia's at because just the talent-rich state, but we're working on it. We're working on it. We'll see how it goes. Pump the brakes. Keep rolling on the other side. Last call brought to you by Volunteer Vodka. Check out our friends at Volunteer Vodka. Mm-hmm. It's smooth, it's refreshing, and
it's made with grapes, not corn.
Goes great in a screwdriver.
They're not GMO grapes
either. It's
made
with grapes and corn, right?
I thought it was made from grapes.
I believe it's grapes and corn.
Oh.
But not potatoes. Most vodka is made from potatoes. But maybe they have potatoes too?
I don't know.
I don't know.
John does this.
But it's good. It's delicious.
It is good, and I think, like, even though live reads are not my forte, I think that is, like, the best thing you can say is that, honestly, 100%,
it's awesome.
I'm being totally honest with you, it is very, very smooth.
I love Volunteer Vodka. I don't hate beer or anything like John does. I'll drink plenty of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've become...
I'm aware.
I've become more and more of a Volunteer Vodka Sprite guy.
Yeah,
it's kind of like my go-to now.
Yeah. If you've ever watched a Voluntary Reaction or Periscope, like, I mean, you've seen us drink it on the air.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's kind of what we do.
Good product. So thanks to Volunteer Vodka. Pump the brakes, keep rolling. Cam, would you like to go first or second?
I can go first.
All right, go ahead.
All right, Wrangler has a new partnership.
Pump your brakes, kid.
Wrangler has paired up with Lil Nas X,
really?
The guy that sings Old Town Road, due to his line in his song that goes, "Cowboy hat from Gucci, Wrangler on my booty."
Nice.
So they have partnered up with him, and it's met with a lot of backlash of people saying they're going to boycott Wrangler. But
why are these people so mad?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Country fans think he's making fun of him, I guess. I don't know. But it hasn't hurt Wrangler, as the high-waisted shorts of the Lil Nas collection have already sold out.
I will say the line in the chorus, "Can't nobody tell me nothing," does feel a little offensive to the country community.
Well, listen, if the country community wants to be mad at Lil Nas X, they should be just as mad at Florida Georgia Line and Rascal Flatts and some of these other. But I don't even know who the new guys are. All these new guys that have basic names? They should be just as mad as those guys.
That's a good point. I have heard a lot of people say this is no different than what Florida Georgia Line puts out.
It's not. Yeah, sure, Lil Nas X doesn't sound exactly like country music used to sound, but it's changed a lot. It's not George Jones and Waylon Jennings anymore, and I love the hell out of those guys. But Old Town Road, it's a catchy song. I like it. Got the horses in the back. And now Lil Nas X has got a
Wranglers on his booty.
Now he's got a sponsorship deal. So
yeah, get that money.
If I'm him, say whatever you want about me. I'm doing good with this Wrangler endorsement.
Yeah.
I guess I wonder if they're dropping Brett Favre.
Ooh, that would be a bad trade.
Is Brett Favre still with? Is he still with Wrangler? Really?
Probably.
Now, congrats to Lil Nas X. Amelia Clark worried about Beyonce. Amelia Clark, she was the actress for Daenerys Targaryen in Game of Thrones.
Her.
Yeah, she's very well known these days. She was worried that Beyonce would hate her after Daenerys turned in the final season of Game of Thrones. After 8 seasons as the Mother of Dragons, Game of Thrones star Emilia Clarke has a lot of celebrity fans, but the most impressive is probably Beyonce. Clarke revealed in an interview with The New Yorker that she was very worried. She said, "All I wanted to scream was, please, please, still like me, even though my character turns into a mass-killing dictator. Please still think that I'm representing women in a really fabulous way." So apparently she was very concerned with what Beyonce might think about Danny's turn in the show. And there's our turn in the show. You know, I'm sad because pretty soon these Game of Thrones headlines are going to quit being a thing. It's just going to slowly die, for the most part, from culture.
Got to find a new show.
Yeah, watching The Sopranos now, so that's not a new show, but you know.
I can give you my Hulu password. Vikings is pretty good. You can kind of get the same
I've got Hulu.
Same feeling.
I might check out Vikings.
I think you'd actually like it.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
I ran through a little bit of season 5 again last night. Season 6 is about to get popped up on.
Yeah. Ben.
Then it'll be over.
Thank you for your service today. Cam, thank you for your service. John will be back tomorrow. Talk Sports will be back to its regular state.
Be back to intern.
And we will see you guys then. It's optional. Up next, stay tuned.
It's optional.
Run.